Welcome everyone to another edition of Community in Depth, and I am so happy to have in studio with us today Rich Menke. He is the administrator for Lakeside Cemetery, and they are coming off of a wonderful project that they recently did honoring the July 4th holiday and just all the wonderful people that are buried out at that gorgeous cemetery. Great to see you.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here, Mo.
Well, thank you so much. So tell me a little bit, first of all, about Lakeside Cemetery, because people have heard where it is, but unless you really have someone buried there, you might not know the names of the different cemeteries.
Right. Lakeside Cemetery is, if you head west out of downtown on Main Street, West 2nd Street, and West 2nd turns into Nininger Road, and our address is 920 Nininger Road. We're right across the street from the hospital.
And that cemetery is how old?
We are now 152 years old.
Oh my gosh. You know, all the cemeteries in town, Rich, how do they all shake out age-wise? Do you know?
Well, St. Luke's, which is the smaller cemetery.
Kind of by the Pet Hospital, where
right,
316
right,
and...
Right.
61 split.
They claim to be a little older,
okay.
They very well could be.
So St. Luke's Cemetery probably serviced St. Luke's Episcopal Church.
Correct.
And then
across the street from them, you know, on 61 would be Elizabeth Ann Seton Cemetery.
Right.
I don't know a lot about that cemetery.
There's some old stones there, I know, in the older part.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to know, because I know the Guardian Angels Church was, that was the first church, Catholic
Correct.
Church, before St. Boniface by maybe 15, 20 years.
Right.
So that'd be interesting to see how far back that goes.
The oldest cemetery in town, I believe, is Oakwood Cemetery, which is just north of the high school.
Yes, that's beautiful.
It is a lovely old cemetery,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
So when we think about our Hastings heritage, your cemetery, Lakeside, was it affiliated with a church necessarily or a group of churches?
No. Lakeside was founded to be non-sectarian, and we are not affiliated with any church or religious organization. We are a nonprofit. All the money that we make goes back into the maintenance of and preservation of the cemetery. And so we have been self-sustaining and self-supporting for 152 years.
Mm, that's awesome. So you have people from all faiths, all walks of life, all generations.
That's correct.
What is the oldest headstone there?
We have one headstone, and please don't ask me the name because I won't remember, but that headstone, the woman was born in 1798.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're getting back into the latter part of the 18th century. The very earliest headstones in the cemetery were actually several people who were moved from Oakwood Cemetery, when Oakwood went into decline and Lakeside Cemetery opened up. And so there were two Gardner children. And we think of the Gardner Mill.
The Gardner House.
Right. Interestingly enough, if I recall my history from Heidi Langenfeld, Gardner had nothing to do with the hotel. They named it in honor of him. But he had lost a couple of children. They were buried at Oakwood, and they were reinterred at Lakeside. And so those were two of the very first interments at Lakeside.
Mm. Mm.
But we have a number of people. A whole lot of our older gravestones would be built in the, those were people born in the early part of the 19th century. So 1820, 1830, 1810 in some cases. So these are, people whose histories go back a long, long way,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the things that we were doing over this past week. Clearly, when you have stones that are 140, 150 years old, they're going to deteriorate.
And are they made of limestone back then?
A lot were made of marble. Of course.
Oh, still, okay.
And there were some sandstone, you know, perhaps some high-quality limestone, but, you know, softer stones because they were hand-carved, and granite would be, is a very difficult stone to carve in that respect. And so those stones begin to weather, and they sink. You know,
sure.
The mortars that were used to keep the stones, in place, wear out. And so it was to replace broken, weathered, and stones that simply could not be read anymore is the reason we brought this organization, which is called Northern Bedrock. It's an AmeriCorps organization based out of Duluth, you know, sponsored by... with all sorts of supports, such as the Minnesota Historical Association, where they're trying to train young adults in historic preservation trades. And so they were here. We had two crews. One crew was here for 4 days. One crew was here for a day and a half. And a crew is five people. And they were here, and we had identified our stones that were most in need, and they would go about trying to rehab them. In particular, where we had a lot of emphasis was, the tablet style of monument, which are when you think of pictures of Moses coming out the mount, you know, and he's holding those stone tablets.
Yes.
Well, you think of one of those,
okay.
That would be a tablet style monument.
Right.
Typically, it's kind of chiseled into a base. And so that tablet is about 3 inches thick, which over 150 years isn't very thick. And so they tend to crack and break, and they worked real hard to put the pieces back together with glue.
Really?
We'd dig up the mortar, or, the base, refit it into the base, mortar it back in, and then clean them. So that was a lot of what they did. We also, if you drive around the old part of the cemetery, you will see obelisk-style stones. The obelisks would kind of shaped like the Washington Monument, tall,
yes.
Narrow. And again, over 120, 130 years, basically those stones, some of them were leaning. And I was horrified to learn that basically we had four or five stones that were just loosely sitting on top of one another, stacked stones.
Those big giant?
Yeah.
Oh, my stars.
Just
that was an accident waiting to happen?
Exactly. So we repaired some of those.
Oh, my gosh.
And then a lot of the smaller tablets that, if you drive around the older part of the cemetery, you'll see the huge family monument, and then near those will be small tablets with initials on, perhaps. Well, that actually marks the specific grave of a family member,
okay.
CH or CFW or whatever it was. And so those were straightened and cleaned as well. So that's kind of the work that they were doing.
So this is a group of younger people that travel around and do things like this?
Right. And they will do all sorts of historic preservation. Could be rebuilding an old wall.
Okay.
I think the job prior to Lakeside was they were rehabbing old wooden windows on a historic building.
Because I would assume that is a trade that is kind of dying out.
Well, perhaps. But, our infrastructure is getting older, and our cemeteries are getting older, and our buildings are getting older, and we have an increasing interest in preserving our history. So there, you could argue the converse as well and say, this might be a growing opportunity for people as well. But without a doubt, last week was hot. It was rainy, it was sweaty, and part of the orientation I gave our, these young people was, you are going to be performing hot, sweaty work, but remember that these were people whose headstones you're working on who were oftentimes born in the early part of the 19th century, and sometimes these were great families in town, grand families, powerful families. Sometimes they, in many cases, were just average people who were going about their lives and trying to do the best they can. This monument represents the last physical connection of that person to this world. And to try to preserve that stone for another generation or two, if that's not a sacred task, what is?
I agree.
So.
Oh, I bet that was a great pep talk.
I hope so.
So tell us about the whole process. Were they there the whole time, all five of the teams?
A board of trustee volunteer, Dana Pettit, went through and identified the stones that were in greatest need. And so we flagged those. And Dana, ever the organizer, actually did a spreadsheet so we could track the progress on them. The young people came in and they did some prioritization of work themselves. Oftentimes would begin by poking and prodding, trying to figure out where the base of these stones were, because many times the bases have been separated from the tablets. Raise and elevate and level that, do any repairs that needed to be redone, and then the final step would be to re-glue the stones and put them back in place.
Is there any kind of sealant you could put on so it helps keep the elements out?
Not that they would recommend. They try and they use very benign chemicals because nothing that would do anything to increase the weather of stone, weathering of the stone. No vinegar, no bleach. Those things are only going to cause more wear and tear.
So what did you use?
It was a particular product, a ZEP product, and I don't remember the name of it. Sorry. But it works pretty well, but it also requires a lot of elbow grease and a lot of water because they have to keep the stones wet while they're doing the cleaning.
Some of the stones I know in older cemeteries, you almost can't read what they said. Is there a way to restore that?
Well, the cleaning helps with that.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Sometimes people will go into a cemetery and do an etching.
Yes.
And that will help you read it a lot.
Okay. So this process was just great. When do you think you will do something like this again, or is this a once in a lifetime thing?
No, I don't think it's once in a lifetime. We have a lot of need. And I think once we had this group here, they opened our eyes to exactly what else needs to be done. And our hope is the board has already agreed to commit, a small amount of budget annually to historic preservation. And so we liked this group. I think we hope to have them back every year for a period of time.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, because you think about rolling forward, the need isn't going to go away.
No. How many gravestones or headstones are there at your cemetery?
Oh, now, that is an interesting question. With over 5,500 people buried,
okay,
there's a surprising number of unmarked gravestones.
Okay.
And then a number of family gravestones.
Sure.
So I'm going to guess 3,500 stones would be my guess.
And you don't have headstones for everybody because you have some interesting ways that people can honor their loved ones, I know.
Right. Burial practices are changing.
Yes.
So we've developed a columbarium garden where we have three columbarium where people can purchase niches for themselves and a loved one. And be buried there or interred there with their cremains. We've developed a boulder garden.
Tell me about that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it really is. These are chunks of granite where you place your urn in a hole in the granite with a bronze cover over it, so it's secure with your name and whatnot in cast bronze. Then finally, we've developed a scattering garden for people who are more interested in a greener perspective and perhaps a more cost-effective perspective. So with the increasing interest in cremation, we're working very hard to develop as many options as possible so that we keep the cemetery vital and relevant for the next 152 years.
And I think the scatter garden piece is so important because then people will always have a place to go back to, and it seems like a very sacred, holy place. Because sometimes when you hear about people scattering ashes, they don't have anywhere then to go back and revisit.
Well, that's exactly right. And if I can tell a story quickly. You know, earlier this year we had an event, Building Bridges had an event, we called it Reclaiming Our History and Our Heritage, where we marked the graves of four families, black families in Hastings, whose graves were not marked. And then we, through the efforts of Heidi Langenveld, invited family members who were still living in the Twin Cities to an event to mark these graves. And it was a deeply meaningful and powerful ceremony and event, particularly for those, for the family members who came back. And it taught me once again how, you know, remembrance and to have a place to go and look up and commune with your elders is something that it's part of the human condition, I believe.
Well, and I do think that you, as the administrator, you have books on your plots, and you have all sorts of history right there you can help people with.
Well, exactly. We have nearly finished the project of digitizing, converting all of our paper records, which of course are deteriorating themselves, you know, preserving them in the future. Everything's on the computer, backed up every 15 minutes. We keep hard copies of all our data in fire safes. You know, so this data is as permanent as data can be in this day and age. So that we can preserve that information. And, you know, again, one of the things that we offer families today is that if you have a family history, a biography that you would like included with the record of a loved one, we can scan that in, put it into the record, so that it's there.
Wow.
In a couple of hundred years when people are doing family research.
Right, right. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Good things going on there, aren't there?
I think so.
Well, I think so too, and I'm thrilled that you came in to tell us all about it. Rick Mankey, he is the administrator of Lakeside Cemetery in Hastings, and if you have any questions about anything that you just heard, you can certainly give him a call at
651-437-6656.
Great to see you.
Well, thanks, Mo.
Thank you. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.